We have a couple of guests here, and you may have somebody. You see this guy sitting on the floor. He's not a child. He's over here. He's going to be taking photos. And we have his name is Jonathan. We have Dirk here. They're from the Canadian Press, and they're doing an article on Mentimeter, which is some technology that we're using this morning. And so Dirk wants to get, or Jonathan wants to get some shots of people using their smartphones when we're using this technology. So if you have a smartphone and a or a tablet, make sure you get that out, because we're going to be doing a live poll this morning. And if you haven't been here before to do this live poll, what you do is you take out your smartphone, you take out your tablet, if you have one of those, and you open up your browser and type in this mentimeter.com, M-E-N-T-I.com, and that's going to open up a window for you to put in a code, 186076. So you put the code 186076 in there. We are going to be doing a show of hands later for those of you who don't have the technology. But the question is that we're going to be answering is, have you ever failed terribly at something? Have you ever failed terribly at something? And there are four choices, and people are already answering. You can see this live poll. Amazing technology. So the first one is, no, I am a winner. So that's probably a baby, an infant who did that, because if you're more than a year old, you would have failed at something. Or yes, I have failed, but I've gotten over it. So I'm not experiencing any leftover baggage from that failure at this point. I'm totally over it. I can talk about it. I've got no ill feelings about it. The next one is, yes, I have, but I'm getting over it. I'm starting to get over it. There's probably still a little bit of pain there somewhere, but it's I'm working on it. And then the third one, or the fourth one, is, yes, I have failed terribly, and I'm still carrying the emotional weight. I'm still carrying the emotional weight from it. I'm still traumatized by it. Now, we're going to keep this going for a little bit here, and I want to ask, there's probably some of you who don't have the technology to do this, or you don't know how, and you've been trying to figure this out, and it hasn't worked for you. You can do this a month from now if you want, and we're going to embed this graph on the website, on our sermon page, and so it's going to be continually updating. 5 years from now, when somebody watches the website, they can do the same thing when they watch the sermon. So I'm going to do a show of hands, and this includes everybody, whether you have technology or not. How many of you have ever failed at something terribly? Have you failed at something terribly? Most people. How many of you have never failed at anything? Not one of you have. You haven't failed. Oh, yes. One person up there has never failed at something. He's given me the thumbs up. But two people, yeah, that's beautiful. They're delusional. Delusional. How many of you have had a big failure, but you're totally over it? It doesn't bother you anymore at all. You're not bothered by that failure at all anymore. You can talk about it with somebody. It doesn't bring up any emotional baggage for you. Yeah, a few of you. How many of you have had a big failure, and it's something that you are currently processing, you're getting over it, but you're still not there yet? How many of you have failed at something and you still carry that heavy emotional weight? Yeah, there's lots of us, right? You know, the truth is that failure is a part of life. It's an inescapable part of life. And so if that's true, we need to know how to deal with it. Last Sunday, we took a look at the very last verses of the Gospel of Matthew. And today, we're going to look at the very last verses of the Gospel of John. And John and Matthew are very different in style. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we call those the synoptic Gospels because they're quite similar. John is very different. The writing style is different, the subject matter is different, John deals with the last few days and the last few hours even of Jesus' life. That's mostly what he deals with. It's a very engaging book, and so if you haven't read that yet, I would really encourage you to read John, because it's a beautiful read. Now, before we read our passage, I want to fill you in on some context. My mic is driving me nuts here today. All right. Now, the context is actually quite similar, actually exactly the same as the context from last week's sermon in regards to what preceded this event. Jesus had been betrayed by the kiss of death, Judas's kiss of death in the Garden of Gethsemane, if you remember. He was arrested subsequently by the Romans. They took him off to be tried in front of the Sanhedrin, which the Sanhedrin was a ruling body of 71 priests, including the high priest, who was Caiaphas at that time. And here's the main thing that I want you to remember as we read our passage. Peter, one of Jesus' inner circle, one of his main disciples, was in the courtyard of Caiaphas, the high priest, while Jesus was being tried. And there is an event that happened there that we're going to take a look at. I want to read that narrative with Peter in the courtyard. Before I do that, I want to remind you that just before that scene, Jesus had his last meal with his disciples. And he told them at that meal that one of them was going to betray him. And of course, that was Judas. But then he also said that all of you, in fact, will desert me. And Peter very adamantly stood up in front of everybody and very confidently said, I will not. Even if all the other disciples desert you, I won't desert you. I will go to the cross with you. And then Jesus broke the news to Peter that, well, actually, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me not once, but three times. So keep that in mind as we read this passage. This is the scenario with Peter in the courtyard. Jesus is in front of the Sanhedrin, and in front of 71 rabbis that are trying him. And here's Peter out in the courtyard. Matthew 26, verse 69. Meanwhile, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard. A servant girl came over to him and said, you were one of those with Jesus, the Galilean. Peter denied it in front of everyone. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Later, out by the gate, another servant girl noticed him and said to those standing around, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. Again, Peter denied it, this time with an oath. I don't even know the man, he said. And later, some of the other bystanders came over to Peter and said, you must be one of them. We can tell by your Galilean accent. Peter swore, a curse on me if I'm lying. I don't know the man. And immediately, the rooster crowed. Suddenly, Jesus' words flashed through Peter's mind. Before the rooster crows, you will deny three times that you even know me. And he went away weeping bitterly. Now, you have to wonder what was going through Peter's mind. What emotions was he experiencing during that whole scene? Because he obviously loved Jesus very much. He alone went, followed Jesus to the trial, went to Caiaphas's courtyard. He followed him, skulked around, risking that he would be caught. And so he obviously loved Jesus' time. So what was going through his mind while he was in that courtyard? What was going through his mind when he was first approached by that little servant girl who said, you're one of them, aren't you? Now, I would imagine that he believed he was going to go to the cross. He believed that he was going to die. He said that in front of all the other disciples, and then he followed Jesus, believing that he was going to follow him to the cross. Now, try to get into Peter's head. I would imagine, before he was first pointed out by that little servant girl, he was having a conversation in his head. Maybe it went something like this. Just stay strong, Peter. Stay strong. You aren't going to desert Jesus. You love him. You'll never desert Jesus. Jesus, even if everybody else deserts him, I'm not going to. I'm going to stay strong. And then as soon as he's confronted, it's, well, Jesus who? No. I don't even know him. I don't know the man. Now, I've had situations like that before where I see someone walking towards me and I sort of have an inkling that they're going to criticize me about something. And as they're getting closer to me, I have this conversation in my mind and it goes something like this. It's just relax, Jeff. Just relax. It's okay. Be calm. Don't get defensive. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Just ask some clarifying questions. And what I always tell people, you know, seek first to understand and then be understood. And I'm having this conversation go on and on in my mind. And you don't have to defend yourself. You don't have to be right. And as I'm having this conversation and they're talking, this conversation is going on in my mind and they're talking to me, my blood pressure begins to rise and I start to sweat and I interrupt my conversation and they're talking and I defend myself. And whenever I do that, I feel like such a failure. Because I, you know, just like Peter, I knew the right thing to do. Now, it doesn't happen as much as it used to, but I still struggle with being defensive, and sometimes I fail. I'm work in progress. I'm way less defensive than I was a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 3 years, or 4 years ago, and Ruth is praying for me that a year from now, I'm going to be even less defensive now less defensive a year from now than I am now. So Peter, I would imagine, was having a similar conversation going on in his head. He fully intended on devoting himself completely to Jesus, and yet three times he interrupts that conversation and denies he even knew Jesus. Three times. A curse on me if I'm lying. I don't even know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. Suddenly Jesus' words flashed through Peter's mind. Before the rooster crows, you will deny three times that you even know me. And he went away and wept bitterly. He felt like a complete failure. Let's show that poll again. Where are we? And if you haven't done it yet, maybe you're old like me and you have a hard time with technology, you can still do it. And there may be people who are watching this or listening to this this week or months down the road or whatever. You can do it as well, just menti.com, and then type in the code and it'll be continually updating as we go along. Have you ever let someone down and you felt like a failure? Have you ever let somebody down and you felt like a failure? I think most of us have. After Jesus was tried by the Sanhedrin, he was put on trial in front of the Romans, and they found him. The Romans found Jesus innocent, but the religious leaders pressured Rome into crucifying him anyway, which they reluctantly did. And Jesus died on the cross, and his friends prepared him for burial. They placed him in a tomb. He stayed in that tomb 3 days, dead, behind a rock that was, the entrance was guarded by a Roman soldier. He rose from the dead 3 days later, and then he appeared to his disciples several times over 40 days. The first time he appeared to Mary Magdalene, who was one of Jesus' disciples, a very courageous woman. And Mary Magdalene is actually mentioned more often than most of the disciples. She had a very prominent role in the ministry of Jesus. The second time that Jesus appeared to his followers, they were hiding out. They were hiding out behind locked doors. The door was barred, and they were afraid that they would meet the same fate as Jesus did. Jesus shows up, and the first thing he says is what? Peace be with you. Peace be with you. They're all extremely excited to see him, to say the least. Thomas wasn't with them at that time, and so 8 days later, Jesus showed up to his disciples again while Thomas was there. Jesus knew that Thomas was doubting that Jesus had risen from the dead. He didn't believe the other disciples when they told him that they had seen Jesus. And so Jesus shows up again 8 days later, and he shows him his hands where they're pierced by the nails, and the hole in his side where he was pierced by a spear. soon as Thomas saw those, what did he say? My Lord and my God. And he worshiped Jesus. So that takes us up to the passage for the day. Now keep in mind that earlier scenario with Peter in Caiaphas' courtyard, he's feeling shame, he's experiencing a whole bunch of emotions, and this is a while later, we don't know how long, but he's still reeling. So John chapter 21, and starting in verse 1. John 21. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the Twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that's James and John, and two other disciples. So seven of the disciples were here. John lists them, and among them was Peter. Now keep in mind all that they had gone through. This must have been a very surreal time for them. Their heads would have been spinning. Peter would have been struggling with extreme emotions and feelings of failure and shame. And they all probably were, because they all deserted Jesus, but Peter much more, because he's the one who stood out from the crowd and said, even if all of you desert Jesus, I won't. And if he was anything like me, I would imagine he would have been continually mulling this over in his mind, and it would have been exhausting for him. When I experience things like that, I need to do something therapeutic for myself. I'm going to call up Derek. Derek's going to come here. Derek preached this summer, and Jen, who is Derek's wife, and she's our administrator, she told the staff what Derek experienced leading up to his sermon and after his sermon. And so just tell us a little story about that.
Okay, yeah, it was August 26th. I remember it very clearly because there was a guy who was sitting just down there that kept telling me to stand right here.
Oh, yeah, who was that?
Yeah, he looked a lot like you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So kind of leading up to, so the sermon itself, like when you're preparing for a sermon, I think that there's kind of this this level of vulnerability. And in that vulnerability, and it's a vulnerability because, for me anyways, it had a lot to do with kind of, and I started my sermon with this by talking about brokenness. It had a lot to do with my brokenness and my failure and wondering whether I could actually get up and preach a sermon. And so there was this kind of vulnerability, and then there was also a weight, knowing that a sermon, whether you're kind of partaking in the sermon or whether you're delivering the sermon, that it connects to the sacred, because each one of us in here is, we're here because we think that there's more than the physical, and so it connects to the sacred, and so there was that kind of weight of responsibility that I felt as well. And anyways, so after I delivered the sermon, I remember on the way out the door, I actually turned to my wife and said, I'm going fishing. Like that's what I said. I'm going fishing because it was kind of like the weight of the sermon. I just needed to do something extremely trivial that didn't mean a lot.
Right.
So, yeah.
And that was therapy for you.
It was, fishing is very therapeutic, right. And that's why I go quite often.
Right. How many have experienced that?
That's why I tell my wife anyways.
Have you experienced that? Yes, yeah. It is. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. And it's really interesting because, you'll find out why it's interesting. So back to Peter. Seven of his disciples are hanging out at the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and they're on the beach. Their minds are reeling. They had no idea what their future would hold, and it's a very surreal time for them. They are feeling heavy. In verse 3, John 21, Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. Exactly what Derek said. He is feeling the weight. I need therapy. I'm going fishing. Well, they said, we'll come too. So they're all in need of some therapy. We're all going fishing. I love that. I do similar things. When I need therapy, sometimes I just go to the river. I go fishing. Continuing on. So they went out into the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. And on the Sea of Galilee back then, they would actually fish at night. They'd fish all night long. That's when the fishing was best. And so at dawn, Jesus was standing at the boat on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some." Now, that's ridiculous. As any fisherman knows that just because you cast the net on the other side of the boat doesn't mean that you're going to get some fish. But they listened to him. So they did. And they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water, and headed to the shore. Now you got to know how much Peter loved Jesus, right? He loved Jesus. And back when he had that failure, he believed that he was not going to fail. And he sees that it's Jesus. He jumps into the water. He wanted to get to the shore and see Jesus. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for they were only about 100 yards from the shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. "Bring some of the fish you've just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. Isn't that such a heartwarming story? Jesus feeding breakfast to his disciples after every single one of them had deserted him. That's heartwarming. Once they were finished breakfast, Jesus moved towards Peter, who was the spokesperson and the one who had really deserted him most prominently. And he knew what Peter was going through. He knew the shame that he was feeling, and he didn't shun him. He moved towards him. Look what happens. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John." Now, remember, Jesus gave Simon, son of John, a nickname, which in Greek it's Petros, Peter, and which means what? Means the rock, right? And now Jesus doesn't use his nickname here. That's the name he always used for Peter. But right here, in this situation, he doesn't use the name Peter. He uses his birth name, Simon, son of John. And we don't really know why he's doing that, but I can sort of guess. You can, maybe your mind will hearken back to when your mother said something like, "Jeffrey Guy Germel," or your father, "Jeffrey Guy Germel." And you know there's going to be an important conversation coming. And so Peter, he hears Jesus, his Lord, his master, his savior, his rabbi, his teacher, and his friend, say, "Simon, son of John." And then he asks him a question. He says, "Do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these?" Now we have to guess what Jesus really meant by that question. Do you love me more than what? What's he really asking? Do you love me more than your fishing career? Do you love me more than you love the other disciples? I think what Jesus, in context, is really asking is, do you really love me more than the other disciples love me? Because remember, Peter was the one who stood out from the crowd, and he often boasted about being more faithful, but about going the extra mile, about never failing Jesus, that he would be more faithful than his buddies. Now, Jesus wasn't trying to shame Peter here. He was using this as an opportunity to help him grow. There's a proverb in the Old Testament that goes like this. Proverbs 27:6. "Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy." Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. And so Jesus was helping Peter see his true heart, because it was the hardness of his heart that was keeping him from having good relationships with others and a good relationship with God. It was keeping him guarded, keeping others at bay. And so Jesus loved him enough to move towards him and ask him that question: Peter, do you really love me more than the other disciples do? Now, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? The Greek language has a lot more verbs or descriptors or words for the word love than the English language does. And the word here, the Greek word here in the original language, is the word for unconditional love. And so Jesus says, Simon, son of John, do you agapao me? Do you love me unconditionally? That's the question he asked Peter. You love me unconditionally. Do you love me more than the other disciples do? And again, he's not trying to shame Peter. He's helping him see reality so that he can grow. He's helping him see that he's got a blind spot that's hurting all of his relationships. And in order for any of us to grow, that's any of us, we need to face the hard fact that we are not where we should be in our capacity to love others. We are not where we should be. And we have these two banners up here. Jesus said the two most important commands are what? Love God and love people. And so he has us on this earth. He has us in Campbell River to teach us to grow in our capacity to love others. And we need to know, if we are going to grow, we need to know that we are a long way from where we should be. We have to face that fact. Well, Peter answered Jesus. He said, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. He doesn't use the same word that Jesus used for love. Jesus used the word agapao. Unconditional love. Peter says, yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. I love you as a friend. That's what that Greek word means. That's friendship, love. So Peter is not as confident as he was before his denial of Jesus, before he disowned Jesus. He's getting a little better picture of reality. Have you ever had somebody come up to you and face you with a blind spot? Anybody have somebody come up and, I have. Yes, some of you have. How did it feel? Was that a good feeling? It's not, is it? It's a terrible feeling. I've experienced it. In my younger days, I had so many blind spots, I couldn't see straight. And I still have them, we all do, and by definition, a blind spot is something you don't know you have. And we all have them. And in order to grow, this is really important, in order to grow, we need to give permission to people we trust and we know love us to help us see our blind spots. This is so important. Peter's starting to wake up to the fact that he has some blind spots, to where he's really at. So he's sort of saying, implying anyway, maybe not saying it directly, but he's implying, well, I'm not sure I love you unconditionally, but I love you as a friend. You know that, Lord. And Jesus says, feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. Now, this is key. Not only does Jesus not shame Peter, he actually gives him a job to do. He says, I'm going to trust you with something. I'm going to trust you with something. Teach others to love the way that I've taught you to love. Every single one of us here has let somebody down, and probably more than once. We've failed. There's nobody here, except for two winners, that are immune to failure. How many of you have seen movies where the protagonist says something like, man, failure is not an option? We've all seen those. The truth is, that failure is not only an option, it's probably very likely in life. We fail. There's a good possibility of failure, and we have to know that it's okay. Otherwise, growth is impossible. So Jesus does the same thing to us as he does with Peter. He reaches a hand down, he helps us up, and he says, I want you to now learn from your failure so that you can go and teach others. I want you to learn from your failure so you can go and teach others. Make sure when you fail that you fail forward. Don't fail backwards. Fail forward. Make it a successful failure. Jesus goes on, he repeats his line of questioning, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Do you agapao me? Do you love me unconditionally? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. I love you like a friend. Then take care of my sheep. And again, what he's saying is learn from your mistakes and teach others to do the same. A third time he asked Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now the third time Jesus changes it up quite a bit actually. In English it looks like he's asking the same question. In the Greek he's not. In the Greek it's Simon, son of John, do you phileo me? Do you love me as a friend? And Peter was obviously very hurt by this line of questioning from his Lord. And John says that Peter was grieved. You know I'm fond of you. I feel love for you, and you're starting to question, you know, would I die for you? I don't know. John says, continues on, verse 17, Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I phileo you, I love you. And Jesus said again, feed my sheep. And he continues on this lesson with Peter. Verse 18, he says, I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, follow me. So Jesus goes on to tell Peter that he would in fact die for him. Maybe he didn't back there, but he would in fact die for him, and he hinted at the kind of death that would befall him. Arms stretched out, carried away against his will. And then Jesus says, follow me. About 10 years later, Peter was arrested, and just prior to this, Jesus' half-brother James had been arrested and he was beheaded. And there was an increasing intolerance in the whole Roman Empire, in all of Jerusalem and in all the surrounding areas towards this new sect called the Way, or the Christians. And Peter was in jail, and he was chained at the time when, I believe, when James was beheaded. He was chained to a guard so that he couldn't escape. And all the Christians in the surrounding area in Jerusalem and all over the place were praying for Peter, and an angel in the middle of the night appeared and miraculously rescued Peter. Shortly after that, King Herod died, and Peter remained in Jerusalem. He had been freed. He remained in Jerusalem for several years, and he was the leader of the church there, and he took care of Jesus' people, his sheep, just as Jesus said he would do. He gave him this job. Now you fast forward 20 years, the Christian historian Hegesippus from the second century tells us that Peter eventually traveled to Rome to minister to the Christians there, and the emperor Nero was determined to have him executed. And his fellow Christians urged him to flee, to get out of the city. Peter left the city, but then he stopped and he said, no, I'm going back. I'm going to face this. He was arrested and he was sentenced to be crucified, and he told his captors that he didn't feel worthy to be crucified, to be executed in the same way Jesus was, and so he asked them if he could be crucified upside down, and they relented. Now, prior to his death, 30 years after Peter denied Jesus. Peter wrote two letters that are in the New Testament. We call them 1 and 2 Peter. Read these two letters and you will see the change from Peter that walked with Jesus, the immature guy who was always pointing to himself and thinking that he was all that, to this mature man who knew how to walk with Jesus. It's a beautiful transformation of character. You know, growth is painful. Growth is always painful. No pain, no gain. We've all heard that. It's true. No pain, no gain. We cannot grow if we don't experience pain. Now, I don't know about you, but I hate pain. I try and avoid pain. But and that's natural. It's kind of weird to move towards pain. That's a sadist or a masochist. But we all experience pain. We cannot escape pain. We cannot escape failure. We can do our best, but sometimes we fail. It's a part of life that's inescapable. And that means that we need to do our best to learn how to face our pain, to use our pain, to use our failure, and respond to them well, because if we don't respond to pain and failure well, what happens? We get hard and we get brittle, and it damages our relationship, and God has called us here to grow in the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Next year at this time, I should be more of all those things. I should be more loving. I should be more joyful. I should be more peaceful. I should be more gentle. I should be more kind. I should be all, but more of all the fruits of the Spirit, so that I can have relationships better, so that others look at me and see not me, but see Jesus in me. That's God's call for us. We can choose to learn from our pain and our failures. We can keep reminding ourselves that failure is actually a normal part of life and it's okay, and then learn to be comfortable or more comfortable with being uncomfortable. Learn from Jesus, who is gentle and humble in heart. Or conversely, we can deflect. We can say, no, it wasn't my fault that I failed. I failed because he did that. I failed because she did this. If he or she didn't do that, I wouldn't have failed. And we deflect. And I'm pretty good at doing that. But in order to grow, we have to say, we have to own, we have to embrace our failure, embrace our pain, and say, no, I'm the problem. I'm the problem. And then we grow. And the choice is ours. We can choose life, and we can use every pain and every failure as an opportunity to grow, or we can give up in despair and get hard-hearted. Remember Judas? Judas failed Jesus miserably, didn't he? A kiss of death, which led to Jesus' crucifixion. Judas experienced the shame and the pain of failure, and how did he respond to it? He went out and hung himself. Peter experienced failure and shame, and he responded differently. He allowed Jesus to show him his blind spots. He received healing, and he used his failure as an opportunity to grow. And so here's the lesson for all of us when we fail. Not if we fail, when we fail. We need to know that failure is normal. Failure is normal. Own it. Embrace it. Number two, see failure as an opportunity to learn and grow. Take seriously what Jesus said. If you're tired and weary and heavy laden, then take my yoke upon you, because I am gentle and humble in heart. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Learn from Jesus. Number three, don't let shame drive you into hiding or isolation. Jesus moved towards Peter. He wants to move towards you. And then Peter then did what Jesus said. He went out and he fed his sheep. And he wants to use us as well. So don't go into hiding or isolation. Number four, stay humble and learn from Jesus. And number five, choose life. Choose life. And I want to close with a couple of Proverbs from the Old Testament. Proverbs 15, 31 and 32. If you listen to constructive criticism, you'll be at home among the wise. Let me read that again. If you listen to constructive criticism, you will be at home among the wise. If you reject discipline, you only harm yourself. But if you listen to correction, you grow in understanding.